The next and last speaker is Mario Campolago, Director of the Emerging Technologies and Infrastructures Directorate of DG INFSO. Mario Campolago has a strong record in supporting e-infrastructures in different areas, and I guess he is the ideal speaker to talk about the future of e-infrastructures. Mario.
Norbert, thanks very much for this introduction. Let me first thank the organizers to invite me to be here today. Let me also thank them to have extended the invitation to be here all 3 days. Unfortunately, I was just able to be here today, but I learned so much in this morning session that I really regret that I wasn't here the last 2 days. Furthermore, like my predecessors, I think that I have to say that that presentation would not be necessary because pieces and bits of the presentation have been said by my predecessors either in the morning or just in this session. And I can't even imagine that other bits have been probably commented in depth in the previous days. So you will have to bear with me. Maybe I'll repeat a few things. Seen from a different angle, I'll try also to quote, at least to refer to my previous colleagues when they have been more eloquent than myself in the presentation. So, Norbert referred that, in fact, a lot of my work has been devoted in the last few years to try at the European level to build a case for an infrastructure for science. And that stemmed essentially from the observation that, in fact, science is changing, like actually all our society, but in a very dramatic way. Some of the things that I'm just quoting here are just elements that have been, as I said, quoted in particular by Johan this morning that made a brilliant presentation where actually she highlighted some of those areas with even examples that I like to give. In fact, today we are addressing a number of global challenges. And we are addressing them because they may affect dramatically our life as human beings, as societies in the future. But while in the past a few things were devoted or analyzed from what we could call big science, today we can see that citizens and students can participate very actively in some of the things that in the past were more reserved to this notion of big science. You know, who knows who is going to discover the cure for the cancer if it doesn't come from a youngster, one of those Generation X guys that have been living with internet every day and that have been able to collate and link a lot of information come to an interesting discovery, an important discovery. And this refers obviously to the importance of data. Data is really probably the determining factor today for the scientific process. I mean, some of us refer it to the data deluge. It has been already referred today. Because, in fact, a lot of the things that we deal with today are born digital material. And that is fantastic because it allows me to work on top of data in complex simulations. You know, jets and airplanes in which we enter to fly from one place to the other have never been tested. They've been simulated in computers and have been put in flying. The other important thing that is very, very relevant in the science today is that it is becoming more and more cross-discipline. In the context of my current responsibilities, I'm overlooking to a domain in the European Commission research, commonly referred as future and emerging technologies. And that's where we are getting inspiration from other disciplines rather than ICT. To start envisaging how the ICT of the future is going to be. So bio-inspired ICT, for example, is something that we are dealing with every day. So you see that this cross-disciplinarity, the importance of the data from the meteorologist community for the ones that do the planning and the tests and the prevention of nuclear disasters is absolutely amazing. While in the past, companies like EDF were using their supercomputers to try to understand the resistance of concrete and doing tests in the middle of the desert to ensure that if one of the planes that maybe not anymore tested in real life falls into one of the nuclear power plants. Today, one of the biggest dangers is that the river that crosses by may get, with a fact of life, floods that will inundate physically those power plants. So you see how this information is important. How, for example, again, if I come back to the example of a provider of electricity, how important would be to monitor the increase of temperature in Berlin, because 1 degree more in the afternoon of tomorrow in Berlin or in summer, for example, may require an increase in the power supply because air conditioners will be put in place. So you see this cross-disciplinarity that is very important in science is permeating in all domains of our society. And interestingly enough, if this was always true, but that probably today is even more true, that some of the expertise that we need in the scientific domain does not reside in our developed countries, just to make this point. We have beautiful, fantastic museums of natural history, but where do we have the diversity, the biodiversity? We'll find it in Philippines. We'll find it probably in Amazonia. And for that, we need the collaboration with the experts that are there. So here are some of the examples of how science is changing today. If I would bring into today's presentation our good friend Galileo and what he has done by changing the way science was done with experimental facilities that he brought into the picture, maybe I should erase the title of that one, because maybe we are today on the verge of a new scientific renaissance. And that's really very important. We are changing the way of looking to science. We are changing the way of looking to the research process. And like just my predecessor speaker, Rudy, mentioned here, we all are actors in this collaborative research process. Now, ICT mediates more and more science and affects actually more and more our day life. We are not able to look into the outer space without having fantastic systems that are controlled by information communication technologies. Any scanner in one of our hospitals is a big computer. It's also true that science and technology have a strong interaction. And I think that would be very important that we look to this loop in a positive way. Science... And we know how much the physicists with big experiments like the Large Hadron Collider can promote the development of new technologies that will appear in our hospitals, in almost everyday life. So, when we look to this new way, when we believe on this new scientific renaissance that some of us equate to this notion of e-science that Joan so well presented in her presentation, then we are looking to new research methods exploiting advanced computational resources, data collections, and new scientific instruments. And again, if we believe in Galileo, then we believe that we need to have the facilities, the tools, the telescope that he used, the small embryonic telescope that he used, we need to have today this as an instrument to do e-science. And I would advocate that this instrument is what we call in Europe, at the level of the European programs, a facility, a tool, an e-infrastructure, an ICT-based infrastructure. And we believe that there is a virtuous circle between e-science, e-infrastructures, and even more, what this working in e-science with e-infrastructures may bring as innovation. So we need to embrace a paradigm in Europe in which we jump deliberately into this world where virtual labs will be, I'm hesitating here to say, more important than wet labs. And I'm saying that not to say that wet labs are not important, but to bring this importance of working on data. Our friends astronomers say that obviously it is important to have the Hubble and to have immense installations here and there in the world. But once they capture the outer space, most of their work is done digging on the data. So you need to have really this perception that today we jump from the wet lab into the virtual lab very easily. When we try to, from one day to the other, see how can we resist as a society to avian flu, we need to screen thousands of compounds quickly to get a better precision where we then go to the wet lab to test it in reality. And the increase of performance that simulation gives to us is immense and is a precondition to be successful and to make sure that Europe can innovate and therefore that we can be in the forefront of economic development. Now, in Europe, we look to the infrastructure from five complementary point of view. First, we need to develop the ability for all of us to cooperate with each other. For the researcher in Amazon and Philippines to collaborate with a museum in Europe. And for that, you need a very, very powerful infrastructure at the level of the communication, at level of network, making possible that we all exchange ideas at the speed of the light. But this is not enough, because we need to be able to share the resources of each other. There is no single entity, institution, country, region that can afford to replicate, just for the sake of replicating, instruments or supercomputers or laboratories. So we need to be able to share these resources. And this is better done when we have ICT tools that will allow us to go into its own databases, computers, and make them and borrow them, if I may say, to do what I need at a certain moment in time. Grid technologies, for example, are doing this very well for us. And obviously, having put in place some kind of communication infrastructure, some kind of sharing of computational resources, data gets, therefore, a little bit of what Rudy was saying, an infrastructure for the librarians, for the scientific data, for the repositories. But we need to work there, because the sciences work very much vertically. So the data that somebody collects is not interoperable with another one. Or, to put it in another way, our culture makes sure that we don't talk to each other very easily, and we need this generational change to make sure that we understand that the data that is collected on the earth sciences or on the social science may be of importance for each other. This means that we have to learn all together, to share the resources, to work, to share ideas. And this can be done once we train ourselves to work with ICT technologies in a way that we can establish virtual research communities, if possible, global virtual research communities. The last of our objectives in Europe is that you can't do those things without investing in some physical infrastructures, and therefore we are in this process that Europe started some time ago to identify big infrastructures that could be important for us, be them a spallation source, be them a supercomputer, or be them an infrastructure for data for social sciences. Now, in fact, we are in a data deluge, like the image suggests. I mean, we today in Europe produce more and more data. Just think about sites like EMBL and what they produce in terms of biodata banks, or CERN and what they produce in Large Hadron Collider when it will be working, or from the biodiversity or astronomy or science or social science, etc. And if we believe that the availability of the information is a condition sine qua non to arrive to a knowledge society, then this makes more and more important that one of the particular focus of the infrastructure is on scientific information, in such a way that the different communities can produce their information, store it, use this infrastructure that is below it to share it with other people in other parts of the world in a transparent way. And then all the qualities that have been mentioned here before, and so well, for example, by Leo, about what it is having a permanent access or what it is to have a no access barriers or to have curation, et cetera, be ensured by that infrastructure. I used to say that it's very important that we understand, and I apologize if I'm coming here to saying things that are probably obvious for all of you, but it's very important that we take into consideration a number of continuum that are more important today than maybe in the past. And this is, we need, from the point of view of information, to ensure that we have a continuity between the past, the present, and the future. Just in the morning, Elizabeth said something very interesting. What is today result of research is tomorrow an heritage from the past. So it's very important that we ensure this continuum, but also that we look to the metaphor of the publications that is a very traditional metaphor through a text, a paper-like, and that we link more and more it to the raw data. If I'm a researcher and I want to question the conclusions of a particular publication, I need in a number of cases to have access to the same data or to complementary sets of data. So linking, establishing this continuum between raw data and publications is very important for the future. And as also Joan said this morning, the paper metaphor of the publication may disappear soon. We know how powerful it is to present a new cell or molecule or whatever from a rendered, high-definition, three-dimensional visualization. And this can be the result of years of research. As I said, also the continuum between different disciplines, between different institutions, and also between research and education. How important would be that our students could have a peculiar but real view of the data that is stored elsewhere as a result of experimentation. Maybe a simplified view. Maybe they don't want, because of their stage of development, to work with the complexity of very large sets of data. But we can use data, experimental data, to promote not just research but education. Now, I will speed up my presentation because I'm sure that we want also to get out of this beautiful place, Bielefeld, to our own sites. But we in Europe look to the scientific repositories in an integrated way by putting it in the context of this effort to make Europe a hub of e-science, a hub of e-infrastructures that can provide the freedom to the researcher to concentrate on their specific problems and addressing them with the assurance that below there is a number of tools that solve the clerical problems for them, like working together, having access to tools elsewhere, storing, accessing information. We have carried out studies, we have carried out some policy work, and that we have put in place some projects. I'm not going to go into detail on that one. Leo gave us a number of recommendations to the Commission about how the Commission is or is not interpreting correctly the notions of open access. But let me say that if you, and you also mentioned that today he's retired, so he thinks he's more appreciated, and I appreciate him very well from his ideas, than for the fact that he was attached to an institution. But, you know, we live in institutions, and institutions have to cope with complementary points of views. And I think that should be recognized that in Europe we have given significant steps in trying to understand, for example, at policy level, what are the implications of open access. and how can we contribute as a funder, like Anne also said, to go along either the green or the gold model. What I can say is that it's remarkable in my view how the Council of Ministers has recognized the importance of e-infrastructures and in particular the relevance of data infrastructures for science. This has been recognized widely in different moments by the Council of Ministers, but also by advisory boards like S3 and the E-Infrastructure Reflection Group. We have been able to launch in this context a number of projects. I'm not going to go into detail on those. I mean, you can get them through the web addresses that I will leave to you in the end. But let me say that we are giving the first steps into creating a pan-European infrastructure that is coping with the specific interests of different communities, but from a perspective of making the lessons learned in one community useful for the other ones and promoting this interoperation between data generated by different communities. Our projects look not just to platforms to federate digital repository resources. They work hand-in-hand with the different communities. Some of them are referred. We have also taken care through the Alliance for Permanent Access to look into the implications that we have in terms of policies, evolution of thinking, etc., and obviously involved all the important research actors. But like I highlight here by these arrows, not with a vertical, a silo-based understanding of what it is providing an infrastructure for scientists, but looking at what is possible to do amongst the diversity of databases in the bioengineering, for example, or looking, for example, how in the domain of earth sciences the in situ data can be combined with data collected by satellites, and also going between different communities to try to provide as many layers of commons as possible for them to build their specificity on top of that. And obviously projects like DRIVER or IMPACT or D4Science are obviously extremely important in this context. Let me just use one last slide. I mean, this is just to say that we invested 37 million so far in this context. I have one only slide here to say and to draw your attention to one action that is currently open. And that has to do with the open access pilot that we identified in the framework program 7. This, as the Commission is always predictable, Leo said that even the Commission is using now the quote from Mr. Newton. Here it is, so I don't want to disappoint anybody. The Commission is more than predictable. But this open access comes from a work done from our, actually, departments that are linking science and society, working closely with the high-level group on digital libraries, looking into publishers, looking into researchers, looking into the exercises done by big communities like the physicists, initiatives from CERN, etc., and try to see what is possible at this stage to do from the point of view of the funding authority. And a little bit like has been said by Anne Leap, we go along very much the opportunity to the green line, if I may say, giving also the opportunity for the projects to use the golden if this is of importance. But obviously we have to measure the impact of a golden approach if you multiply, for example, the number of publications by the literally thousands of publications that are generated by our own projects. But I think that reaching the level where we are not just encouraging the people to put their results of their research in the public domain, we are actually defining contractual clauses that we will put in, as he said here, in 20%, roughly 20% of our domains of research. It is an important step. But it's even more important because we decided to associate to this legal constraint, if I may say like this, although I think that this is a legal opportunity from the point of view of the research community. We also attach to it the fact that we are ready to put now 4 million on the table to make sure that we can complement the institutional or the discipline-based repositories with a pan-European infrastructure for deposit and access to those publications. And that is what is open at this moment in time until the 17th of March. And that's where I make a plea here for the people that is already acquainted with the problematic and solutions for maintaining in the digital format, keeping, let me say, the records of science, to come clean and to help the European Commission to establish an operational infrastructure that will allow our FP7 projects to deposit and access the information, the results of their research. It's this effort that, also coupled with efforts like Europeana that we have seen described here today, show that the European Commission is making an holistic view into the process, the problems of new vision, of a new renaissance for science, and addressing the access to the information, be it the one that is being day-to-day generated by our researchers or the one that corresponds more to the cultural heritage, and making sure, again, this continuum exists. That was the basics of my talk today. I'm sorry if I repeat some of the concepts that you have been confronted before. It was a real pleasure for me to be here, and I hope that was a real pleasure for you also, because I myself learned a lot, and I hope that all of us learned. So thanks for the organizers for this opportunity. And from our little corner, that's what we are working, and that's what we offer to you to help this concept of the e-library of the future. Thank you very much.